hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. I'd like to begin by saying how pleased we are to be invited, to have been invited to hold court session here in Dark County. I need to thank a few people because this doesn't happen without the work of a lot of people. Judge Hein, of course, this is his courtroom, and we disrupted his courtroom at least for today and probably more days than we can imagine. Stephanie Blyer, who is the coordinator here in Dark County, the Dark County judges, of course, and the staff, and many volunteers who have helped the Dark County Bar Association and the educators. They're critically important to this being a successful experience in the Dark County County Commissioners. This is the 54th session. The court has held off-site since 1987, and we've had, today we'll have about 270 students who will have the in-court, in the courtroom experience. We've had about a total of 24,000 students who've had this experience since 1987, and a little over about 31,000 people overall. Well, what you will see from here till the end of the oral argument is what you would see if these cases were argued in the courtroom in Columbus. The first case is 06-1619, Kevin R. Flynn and Margaret M. Flynn versus the Westfield Insurance Company, Mr. Teeter.
May it please the court, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, McLaughlin, Mr. Ney. My name is Steve Teeter, and I'm privileged to be before this court today representing my longtime client, Westfield Insurance Company. With the court's permission, I would like to reserve 3 minutes of my argument time for rebuttal. For the benefit of our guests from Dark County, I want to start just by stating the sole issue which this court agreed to accept, and that is whether an employee driving his personal auto is covered for injuries under a business auto policy when the insured business has purchased uninsured, underinsured coverage only for the company's autos, all of which was scheduled in the policy and for which a premium was paid. For those of us who actually enjoy reading business auto policies, and I dare to say there's not very many of us left, the review of an insurance policy typically starts with any insured, and I suggest this court start by a review of the declarations page. The declarations page is really the map to what the insured selected as coverage, what autos are to be covered, what premiums are to be paid, and what the limits of coverage are. In this particular case, the declarations page is only 4 pages. It is in the court supplement at pages 1 through 4. It's fairly short, fairly straightforward. And the first page, which any insured would see and which I ask this court to review carefully, sets forth 2 items. One is item 1, which is the named insured. And in this particular policy, the named insured is identified as Lawyers Title of Cincinnati Incorporated, doing business as Griffin and Fletcher. Now, I suspect that maybe this court did what some of the counsel in this case did when they first saw that is to say, what does that mean? I mean, I think we would probably all agree that a title company cannot do business as a law firm. And the record demonstrates how this came about, and it's really undisputed in the record that in 1990, Lawyers Title Insurance bought this policy as a corporation. Subsequent thereto, the title company and an affiliated law firm began practicing out of the same offices, which meant they had a lot of the same equipment, copiers, desks, you know, things that were being shared or bought by one or the other. And Lawyers Title asked the agent if they could identify Lawyers Title, Inc., doing business as Griffin Fletcher, in case there was some kind of a disaster or fire that caused damage to that personal property, they wanted it to be covered. And Westfield agreed. The policy, however, remained in the name of Lawyers Title of Cincinnati, Inc., and if the court looks at the second supplement, page 22, that's the second supplement that was filed by Mr. Flynn's counsel, at that page, it identifies on the main declarations page that the named insured, is, and then there's a colon, and it's filled in, a corporation. Now, the second item on the declarations page is the schedule of coverages and covered autos, and this is really the key point to my client's position. It says that each of these coverages will apply only to those autos shown as covered autos. And as we now know from page 3 of the declarations page, there are 9 different options of covered autos which an insured can select based on what coverages and protection it wishes to get and how much premium it is willing to pay.
Counsel, do you, I take it you do dispute that the plaintiff here is an insured under the policy?
Is the plaintiff an insured?
Yes.
Yes, in this particular accident, the plaintiff is not an insured.
Is not?
Is not.
Why?
The reason that he is not an insured is that the coverages that were selected for uninsured, underinsured coverage were owned vehicles and hired vehicles.
Well, and you've read your opponent's brief. They take you through how under certain coverages they are limited to the owned vehicles, and on others, such as the un and underinsured coverage, the same limitation is not spelled out, and he cites a number of cases where that was in and where it wasn't. But I want to take you back to establish when the policy refers to who is an insured under the UIM coverage, who the U is in your mind.
In my mind, Your Honor, our position is that the U means the named insured. And the named insured means Lawyers Title of Cincinnati, Inc., doing business as Griffin Fletcher.
Well, now, I don't need to drag you through.
I know.
Gladys and Ponzer, but the answer to that question under both still is it has to be a human being. It can't be a business entity that isn't capable of being harmed. So how do you get past that?
Here's how I would respond to that, Your Honor. First of all, what the court did in Gladys was in response to what had happened in Ponzer and Izawa. And court's aware, Ponzer said that apply to a business, and that the second section and the fourth section have to apply to businesses. What Gladys said was that these sections don't always apply when you're talking to about a business. And it said, absent language to the contrary.
They don't apply to human beings who are driving their personal autos outside the scope of their employment, but they do apply to human beings who are driving their personal autos in the course of their employment.
And I have two responses to that, if I may.
Yes.
One is that Gladys does not say that if you are driving in the course and scope, you are automatically covered. What Ponzer says is absent language in the policy indicating to the contrary. I'm sorry, Gladys. Absent language in the policy indicating to the contrary. And in fact, this policy does have language indicating to the contrary. More importantly is that when the court...
I want to establish something fairly simple. I understand your argument that the coverage is excluded for the reasons that you led off with, but it seems to me that you don't even need to get there. In your view of the world, you doesn't mean a human being.
You
B1 of the UIM coverage.
I believe that you means what the policy says it means, and that
is you a human being capable of injury or not?
No. No.
So nobody's covered?
No, that's not true. Every human being that occupies a car for which coverage was scheduled and a premium was paid is covered. The question, I believe, is whether or not you means every employee in the course and scope of employment. And the policy simply doesn't say that.
Is the law firm an insured in this case?
Is the law firm an insured? I believe that the law firm is probably insured for the personal property because that's what they asked for.
Well, if the law firm is insured and it's a partnership, doesn't that cover those individuals?
Are the partners covered? And my answer to that would be no. May I explain?
Yeah, I wish you would.
Here's the reason why. The coverage that was purchased, whether it was for a corporation, for a partnership, or for both, the coverage that was purchased for UIM was Symbols 2 and Symbol 8. Let me take Symbol 8 first because that's the easy one. Symbol 8 says that it covers autos you lease, hire, rent, or borrow, and it specifically says this does not include any auto you lease, hire, rent, or borrow from any of your employees or partners. There's no dispute in this case that Mr. Flynn was an employee if LTOC is the insured, and was a partner if Griffin Fletcher is insured. So Symbol 8 does not provide coverage. Now the question becomes, does Symbol 2 provide coverage? Symbol 2 is owned autos. The argument which Mr. Flynn's counsel has made is that if a partnership's named, all the partners are covered, and Mr. Flynn owned this car. We dispute that for two reasons. One is, if in fact Mr. Flynn owned this car, then his coverage would be excluded by the other owned auto exclusion, which is exclusion C5A at page 8 of the supplement. We asserted that in the court below, and Mr. Flynn's argument was, wait a minute, he doesn't own this car. The bank owns this car, it's a leased vehicle. If he doesn't own this car, he's not covered under Symbol 2. If he does own this car, it's excluded because it wasn't scheduled, it wasn't purchased, and a premium wasn't paid. When you look at the declarations page, what it's clear the parties were doing is what the testimony supports their conduct is doing, which is that everybody who had their own car was told, you need to get your own coverage. And those cars that were owned by the corporation were all insured for UMUIM coverage. And there's legitimate business reasons why companies do that.
How many vehicles were covered under this policy, in your view?
There were 10 vehicles that were initially covered, all owned by lawyer's title.
Are you saying they were covered because they were scheduled on the policy?
They were chosen, they were scheduled, and a premium was paid.
For the 10 vehicles?
For the 10 vehicles. However,
initially, or go ahead.
I have to qualify that because one of the things that insureds were doing during this time period was trying to reduce UIM premiums, particularly corporations and businesses, because premiums were going through the roof due to Ponzer and Ozawa. So what companies were doing was they were buying liability coverage for any auto because their liability exposure is regardless of what car is being driven, and they wanted to protect the company. But for UMUIM, the premiums were extremely high, and so they were telling employees, if you're going to use your own car, you have to get your own coverage. We're only going to insure the company's car. And in fact, lawyer's title, right before this accident, took off 5 of their vehicles and put them on company cars for just that reason. So what, you know, the UMUIM is a contractual.
When you say they took off 5, you mean they took 5 of the vehicles that originally had been covered and no longer provided coverage for them?
Put them on personal auto policies. Now, the reason that a company would want to do this, would want to insure for any auto on liability, but only owned and hired autos, is that UM coverage is not an exposure to the insured. The corporation or the business is trying to protect the people that are in the car. But the people who are driving their own cars in the scope of employment are protected in two ways. One is they're allowed to buy as much coverage as they think they want, and it will cover them in their own car. It won't cover them in a company car because of the furnished for regular use exception. So companies can reduce their premiums by having the insurers, having their employees or partners buy their own coverage. And they know also that if they are in the scope of employment, in most situations, workers' comp is going to provide them coverage. So what the companies...
I'm going to take you back. Do I understand your strongest position then, or your strongest argument is that because the policy only scheduled originally 10 and then modified it to 5 vehicles, those were the only vehicles covered, and because Mr. Flynn wasn't operating one of those, there isn't any coverage?
Or UIM, that's correct.
That's your position, strongest position.
That's my position, yes, sir. And in fact, the policy says that and the conduct reflects that. there's no dispute.
Make any difference that he was or wasn't operating this his personal vehicle, which you say wasn't covered under this policy, in the course and scope of his employment, either for the title company or the law firm?
Not for purposes of UMUIM.
What significance legally, in your view, does it have that he was operating that vehicle in the course and scope of his employment?
Well, one is that if he is in the course and scope of employment, his employer is secondarily liable, and this policy provides that business with protection for that vicarious liability. For UMUIM, the company decided and chose to protect only the company-owned cars, regardless of scope of employment. If you were to say that scope of employment is the determinative test for UMUIM, you have restricted coverage beyond what my client agreed to provide. The people who are occupying company cars are covered whether they're in the course and scope, whether they're an employee, they can be a family member, they could be a hitchhiker. Anybody in that car is entitled to be protected. Scope of employment is nowhere mentioned in the policy as a prerequisite. So our position is that, you know, the symbol 9 clearly says that one of the options that you have as an insured lawyer's title is to buy coverage for your employees and your partner's vehicles. They didn't select that. It was not an expense that they wanted. It was not an expense they were willing to incur, and it was not a coverage that they
acquired. Is that one of the symbols that they could have checked that would have made it clear that that coverage was purchased?
That's absolutely right.
Which symbol would that have been?
Symbol 9.
9.
Symbol 8 says it expressly excludes employees' cars and partners' cars. Symbol 9 says that symbol includes autos owned by your employees, partners, etc. So it was there, it was available, if you wanted to purchase it and you wanted to pay for it. And the bottom line on this case is that was not a coverage that insurers wanted to select at that time. They didn't want to pay for it, and this insurer did not agree to buy it. If I have any time, I'll reserve it for rebuttal. Thank you very much,
Thank
Your
you,
Honor.
Mr. Teeter. Mr. McLaughlin.
Mr. Chief Justice, and if it please the court, Mr. Teeter, my name is John McLaughlin. Pete Nay and I represent Kevin and Peggy Flynn.
Could you pull that microphone closer to yourself?
Thank you. Kevin Flynn qualifies as you under the Westfield policy. And those who qualify as you under the policy, they can recover benefits whenever they're injured by an underinsured motorist. They don't need to be in a covered auto. They can be a pedestrian, they can be riding a bike, they can be driving any auto, they can be occupying any auto.
Is it your position that you read Gladys to mean that if you are in the scope of your employment, no matter what you're driving, you're covered?
If you are within the scope of your employment.
Do you believe that Gladys was written so that a policy could exclude that coverage? Or do the exclusions become meaningless because of how you read Gladys?
If there's a valid exclusion, Your Honor, you can write your policy to define an insured as an employee operating a covered auto.
And did this company in fact select symbol 8 instead of symbol 9 because it wanted to reduce the premiums on its underinsured coverage?
No, Your Honor. It eliminated, there were 10 specifically described autos. It eliminated it because the property damage coverage was expensive. And so it eliminated those vehicles and put them on another vehicle. It had nothing to do with underinsured motorist coverage.
So what did sections 8 and 9 define? When you picked symbols 8 and 9, you chose symbol 8, which said it excluded cars owned by individuals, partners, family members, and you chose not to take 9, which included those. Is that your opinion that it only covered property damage for those cars and not UMUIM?
Your Honor, I'll try to answer your question. Is that for uninsured motorists, you can qualify in a variety of ways. One is if you qualify as you. Another way is if you are operating a covered auto. That my argument in the position from Gladys and Ponzer and King is that if If you qualify as you, you don't need to be
okay, in a company. Okay, so you're ignoring 8 and 9 for the purposes of your argument. You say it's immaterial because the word you is inclusive despite any exclusions selected. That's
well,
your
well,
position.
Well, those aren't exclusions you're on. 8 or 9 are how you define a covered auto. It's not an exclusion.
Well, 8 excludes personal autos and family autos, correct?
It doesn't exclude it, Your Honor. It's an option that that could be selected that would identify those autos as covered autos. It doesn't exclude exclude the coverage.
If the language says it does not cover personal and family autos, what do you believe that means?
That means that if you selected that coverage, a covered auto wouldn't mean those types of vehicles. And remember that.
How do you square that then with the fact that you picked 8 and yet you're claiming that you have to ignore 8 because you allows coverage?
Your Honor, they selected owned autos and covered autos for those occupying a covered auto. You didn't need to for covered auto to include a partner or employees' vehicles because they all already qualified as you, as a partner in the law firm and as an employee within the scope of employment.
So in your opinion, Section 8 had no meaning?
No, Your Honor. It had a meaning for occupants, other people who could occupy a covered auto.
Counsel, were there premiums paid for the 10 automobiles that were identified plus all of these other autos that were owned by you?
And that's a good point, Your Honor, and I want to discuss the premium issue. There's premiums charged for different coverages. For property damage coverage, there's premiums charged. And in this policy, the covered autos for property damage, one of them is specifically described vehicles, and that's item 3. And there was
the 10 vehicles initially.
That's correct. So there is a premium just for those vehicles.
Those 10 vehicles are titled to the business.
To the corporation.
Okay. That's
right, Your Honor. So there's a premium for that coverage. The law firm and the corporation also paid a premium over $2,000 for uninsured motorist coverage, which defined uninsured as you. It defined it as you, and that's one of those who qualify as you are entitled to recover. And that's what that $2,000 paid for. It's up to the insurance company to determine how to rate rates its premiums. It's not up to the insured. So they paid over $2,000, $2,700 for UIM coverage that included you, which was defined which is the partnership, the individual partners, and employees within the scope of employment.
Just let me follow quickly, Mr. McLaughlin. That $2,000 UIM coverage was on the 10 vehicles, am I?
No, Your Honor. It
was on the policy issued for liability coverage on the 10 vehicles.
Your Honor, the 10 vehicles they're only there for property damage coverage. Those 10 vehicles are one option to define covered autos.
Did this policy provide liability coverage?
It did, Your Honor.
On which vehicles?
It depended on liability coverage covers people, not vehicles. One of the ways you can get liability coverage is by occupying a covered auto. But you can also qualify as being you in any auto. So it doesn't provide liability coverage only to those people in those covered autos. They're not covered autos, they're specifically designated autos. Those specifically designated autos are only for the property damage. If you look at the physical damage and physical damage comprehensive and physical damage collision, 7, symbol 7, which represents that specifically described vehicles, those 10 items, that was selected for property damage. It wasn't selected for underinsured motorist coverage.
How many employees were covered then with that $2,000 premium for uninsured motorists in this company? Do you know how many total that would be?
I don't have the total of how many employees that were working for the law firm in Griffin and Fletcher. More than
five?
There were certainly
more than five. More than
10? Yes, sir.
More than 20?
Approximately about 20, Your Honor. That's my recollection for the record. I can't point to a specific reference in the record to that.
That would equate to about $100 a year per employee. But your argument is if they didn't charge enough, that was the insurance company's
fault. The insurance company is responsible for rating that. They describe what's covered, and they're responsible for rating it appropriately. And that's what this court has said in the Martin case.
Counsel, are you arguing that the decision in Galatas mandates a result in your favor, and that's why you're arguing the scope of employment? It sounds like opposing counsel talks of it as a red herring, but if I read your brief correctly, to fit within the Galatas decision, you're saying because this is a corporation, the word "you" is ambiguous in referring to UIM, the portion of Scott Ponser that was left alone in Galatas suggested that unless the individual was operating outside the scope of employment, that individual would be covered under the Scott Ponser rationale.
Exactly, Your Honor. The only thing Galatas did to Ponser was to eliminate coverage where an employee wasn't within the scope of employment. Galatas reaffirmed Ponser otherwise.
They reaffirmed King for that concept.
Yes,
not Galatas. I mean, not Ponser.
It was King, Your Honor. That's right. But Ponser also, that the portion that an employee within the scope relied on King.
Right.
And Galatas, the policy in Galatas, it's the ISO policy 2133, the same one that's in this case, the exact same one. The declarations page. If you look at the declarations page, and it's the CA 0002. It was in effect in 1990. The same one that was in Galatas. Stare decisis requires this court to follow that. In Galatas, the court found that employee within the scope was you, and that there was no language limiting coverage to you, requiring you to be occupying a covered auto.
Did the Galatas opinion, did the Galatas underlying insurance policy have the same exception that excluded family and partnership-owned vehicles?
It's not referenced which autos were covered autos. That you can't tell from the decision, Your Honor.
As counsel, I mean, Scott Ponser and its progeny, related to ambiguity within the policy. Are you saying that the declaration page, which opposing counsel really referred to in his argument, that declaration page does not cure any ambiguity by saying, here's what the parties contracted to, here's what premiums were paid for, you know, what premiums were paid?
If I could refer to that language, Your Honor, it's supplement page one, or the second supplement, page 100, is the declarations page. If I could show you what that language really means. There are five coverages described in that section. It's item 2, schedule of coverages and covered autos. There's a column that has coverages and then lists five coverages: liability, auto med pay, uninsured motorist, and physical damage, comprehensive physical damage, collision. And then next to it, it has a column for covered auto. And then above that, is language that explains how this works. I mean, there's nine different categories of covered autos. So the language that Mr. Tita is referring to is each of these coverages will apply only to those autos shown as covered autos. That means that only those autos designated are covered autos for that particular section. So if you for physical damage, you picked specifically described autos. Those are the only autos for that particular coverage section. That language doesn't mean that you have to be occupying a covered auto to qualify for these coverages.
But then the uninsured motorists, the covered auto symbols are 2 and 8. So we're talking about those being the designated UM coverages, correct?
That's how, and with UM, you can qualify in there's four different classes of insureds. Occupying a covered auto is only one way you can you can qualify as an insured. All this does is explain the covered autos portion, how you can qualify as occupying a covered auto. It has nothing to do with, and doesn't limit whether you has to occupy a covered auto.
You're looking at the two together, whereas opposing counsel is looking at covered autos as the sole limitation.
That's correct, Your
Honor.
That's
the distinction between the two sides here.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Counsel, I want to clear one thing up. My reading of your brief indicates that you cite a string of cases in which the language was different, and I don't want to misstate your position, but I believe your position is, had they chosen different language, they could have excluded coverage for your client, and that there are a string of cases with the use of different language. This is post-Gladys, and with all of that out there, but they didn't do that. Is that misstating what you've laid out?
No, Your Honor, that's exactly it. If Westfield wanted to limit coverage to those occupying a covered auto, and clearly did it in the way those other cases did it. Westfield changed its policy and now defines an insured differently. If they did that, they certainly could have limited it to those occupying a covered auto. They didn't in this policy, which is the same policy as the policy in Gladys. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McLaughlin. Mr. Teeter, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Mr. Teeter, I'll start you with a question for your 30 seconds. Did Westfield change its policy and others, as Mr. McLaughlin just suggested to us?
To deal with this issue?
Yes.
Not to deal with this issue. Many, many policies changed after Ponzer and Ezawa, but this policy couldn't because it was a 3-year policy, to do away with the U language because this court had interpreted that to include, for example, I had a case where a boy was riding with a neighbor lady to a baseball game and got hurt by
it. So the fact is that at the end of the 3-year period, there could be a changed definition of insured.
That's correct.
As could have been done, but it wasn't done in this instance.
That's right. And part of it is, Your Honor, if I may.
Please.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean if you
no.
would.
Go
is,
ahead.
Is that what Gladys, I believe, said was absent any specific language to the contrary. We're going to interpret you to mean employees in the course and scope, even though the policy doesn't say that. But this policy has clear language to the contrary. And plaintiff argues, well, that's an ambiguity because it conflicts with Ponzer. But if that's true, you can never undo the Ponzer definition. And those three categories, other than occupying a vehicle, none of those really apply to a business. A business can't have family members that are covered. A business can't drive a car. A business can't have a consortium claim. So when this court attempted to back off of Ponzer and Ezawa, which I would submit was a good move, and Ponzer and Ezawa were very difficult for the legal world, but when they backed off of that, they tried to find an explanation that would contort you to fit with the business. And the truth is, you doesn't fit with the business. It just doesn't fit because you cannot drive a car. One brief response on my time up, then I won't do the other ones. Thank you for giving me extra time, Your Honor. Appreciate the court's time.
Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.